Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through WCTCAM, restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. I think I want to tackle a topic today that doesn't, in our first 9 minutes, our little first segment here, that deals with something other than food and deals with the restaurant industry.
Okay.
And
you look serious.
Well,
that frightens me a little.
Well, it is serious. You know that I voted for Barack Obama,
and
I think that he's doing a lot of good. I think he's doing a good job overall. And people sort of realize that most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time I vote on the Democratic side, certainly the Republican people that I voted for and support. And most of the time you probably wind up on the other side of the line. With this whole health care debate that's going on, there are proposals before the legislature that look likely that could well put us out of business.
Oh, I think even if they didn't put us out of business, I think there's a possibility that they would put us out of the desire to do business, put us out of the desire to be in the restaurant business anyway.
Oh, sure.
For us to do other things and say, you know what, the restaurants are too much work, they're too labor intensive for too little out of it, either sell them, close them.
Well, the thing is, if there's too little out of it, you can't sell them. Mm-hmm. Who's going to buy the thing that doesn't make very much money?
Right.
You know, my problem, I believe strongly in universal health care. I believe in a single payer system. I believe that Americans should have a right to health care. But if you put it on the backs of employers, that is just propagating the same problem. Because what happens when you lose your job?
Right. Well, that's the part about this that I don't completely understand. And I understand that there's a Medicaid system and a Medicare system. But if unemployment goes up by, let's call it a low number, 2-3% because of this measure, which I think it easily could. I think it could go up by 10% by creating mandatory health care paid for by the employer. What is the cost to the system? What's the weight on the system at that point? I mean, one of the problems that we're having right now is as unemployment increases, and it's increasing, that there's a lot more weight on the Medicare system because there are lots of people who were getting insurance from their employees who are no longer.
You're talking about Medicaid.
Medicaid, I'm sorry. Yes, Medicare is for elderly, yes.
Well, I want everyone to understand that when you talk about saying the lowest number I've seen is for employers who don't provide health care to their employees, a $750 per year fine.
Correct.
Per employee. That for us amounts to $30,000 a year for 40 employees.
It could be as much as
$50,000 a year.
Sure.
In this current economic downturn, if you take $30,000 from Mark and $30,000 from me, I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I want to keep doing the restaurant thing.
Right.
And if I don't keep doing the restaurant thing,
forget just want to, okay? It increases the risk of owning the business because now we're not just talking about profit to lower profit. Maybe you're talking about profitability to not profitability.
Or negative. Or, you know,
right,
brings you closer
in debt.
When you have a job, every time you get closer and closer to zero in your job, you say, you know, sooner or later I'm not going to be able to work for this anymore, right? When you own a business, the closer it gets to zero. See, when you have a job, the lowest you can get to is zero.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever says, okay, by the way, your boss can't come to you and say, you know, we're cutting your pay by 30%. Okay, we're cutting your pay by 30%. Okay, now we've decided you still have to come to work, but you have to pay us. Okay.
Well, but you can create, to complete the analogy, you can, I think, a person can have $5,000 a month in expenses, let's say, or $10,000 a month in expenses, and if your job goes from $12,000 a month in pay to $7,000 a month, maybe there's a certain amount of those expenses that can never be trimmed.
But that's different than the job itself taking money away from you.
I agree. It is.
And what can happen if you own a bar or a small restaurant or a medium-sized restaurant like we own, actually, I would say a large restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a point where if your expenses, it goes below zero, and it can happen rather quickly. So, we're getting this economic downturn has already caused a lot of restaurants to run it really thin. And restaurants are traditionally one of those places that don't provide health care to our employees. And let me tell you something else about how this is going to come down. The large corporations are going to be the ones most able to provide health care to their employees. The mom and pop with a dozen employees or 20 employees or 30 employees in one location, they can't afford – and listen, I'm a liberal Democrat. I'm a moderate Democrat. They can't afford, just giving you the facts, they can't afford to give health and care to their employees. And so some of them will close their doors.
Well, let's take the other point. Let's take the other side of the argument for a second just to flesh this out because what the answers are going to be on the other side is, well, raise your prices by that amount.
Well, I was the water supplier in town and everyone needed water and couldn't cut down on their water consumption, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But restaurants right now have lowered their prices. There is no possibility of
raising lowered their margin.
And lowered their margin. Now, listen, if we go out, and there's no danger of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi going out. I mean, if I have to spend $3,000 a year per employee, I would say we would go out, honestly.
Right.
But if Stage Left goes out because the burdens of this are too much, Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi go out, I'm going to be able to find a job. Okay, in the pecking order, I won't do maybe as well, but maybe I will. But I'll be able to find something to do to pay a living and, mm-hmm. and get enough for my health insurance. I know that I'll be able to do that. Mark will be able to as well. Lou will be able to as well. He's our investor and partner and friend. But I'm going to fire 70 people.
Mm-hmm.
70 people.
And some of them simply won't find other jobs right now. Certainly not for a while.
And they will not have health care, and they will not have an income, and they will not be able to buy their own health care. So, the reality of the system is no one has the cojones to say, and Obama knows that he can't get past what needs to happen because he used to be in favor of single payer. Look, if you want to have universal health care, then, and I'm not saying whether you do or you don't, I believe you should, but I think I understand there's a live debate. But if you want to say
I'm not necessarily one who believes that we should have universal health care.
But if you want to have universal health care, then you have a universal tax and you provide it. But this is an attempt to say, we're going to give you universal health care, and you know what? There's no tax. We're going to tax the employers. Well, guess what? When you tax the employers on the job, the employer makes fewer jobs. Now, look, I know that people have made that argument a lot to thwart a lot of
really
good...
It's a very Republican stance you have there.
And I think it's sometimes made disingenuously.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about increasing the burden on all employers by this much, we're not talking about a 2% raise. We're not even talking about we're talking about an 8% tax or a $750 minimum contribution per employee. I believe in universal health care. But I don't... But this is flawed, and if it puts these small businesses out, what you're going to find, Legal Seafoods will find a way
right.
to get their health there because they make more money than we do. They make
to make
more
it happen.
Those corporations,
even if what Legal Seafoods does is hire temporary employees or part-time employees, or the lowest common denominator here is going to succeed, because if you can go, and you're a huge corporation and you can hire people, let's say for 18 hours a week. Those places are going to succeed.
Well, but also, you have large corporations are able to extract more profit per employee,
no
more
question.
Profit per
no,
square foot,
it's fact.
More profit per dollar of revenue than mom-and-pop restaurants. They're much more efficient than we are.
Mm-hmm.
They're great at making – what corporations are? They're great at making money. Maybe not always great at making food, but they're great at making money. And they can absorb, if they have to buy health insurance – it'll hurt them, but they'll
right.
be
more
able to
easily.
Absorb it.
I don't. Let's not say they can absorb because we saw Bennigan's go out in the last year.
But Giuseppe's Trattoria around the corner from you, which has 22 employees, he can't take $22,000 a year off of his bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to close his doors, and you're going to wind up with Pizza Hut instead
mm-hmm.
that can figure out how to get you crap food. And the Pizza Hut pizza, I would assume, costs Pizza Hut a heck of a lot less to make than, Giuseppe making the pizza by hand you know, in the corner. So
Giuseppe, really? You got to go there.
Sorry, am I offending your Italian sensibility? It's next to Patsy's Irish Bar, I'm sure. But, you know, I think that we need to be sober in our discussion of what's going on. And, you know, while, again, I am for universal health care, I believe we should have it in the country. Or we should have a national option. I believe that. But we need to divorce it from employment.
I'm going to say that I believe that there needs to be a minimum standard of health care that's available.
I would
agree.
And you and I would probably put that minimum at a different level of what's available to everyone. But to have it tied to employment and to take the cowardly way out and say, oh, no, we're not going to raise your taxes. We're going to raise employment taxes, which is... You know, if I have to pay taxes to pay you, it means I pay you less.
You know what? We're printing trillions of dollars anyway. Print another trillion or two.
Can I tell you something? I think that there have been so many studies done that say that the long-term savings of, like you say, a primary care, at least, that is nationally available. Mm-hmm. You know,
Francis,
look,
and I have talked about this a lot off the air.
Your kid gets sick, and if you can get them free primary care, you take them, and it costs the state $20 to have what do they call those nurses? Nurse practitioner. See your kid, give him some
antibiotics. Probably cost them $50 or $100, but yes, I understand.
No, but it costs the state, if you're doing that in a clinic, it doesn't cost that much per visit. But maybe it costs $100 for the visit, let's say, for the medicine and the follow-up and the whole shebang, right? And the kid gets the antibiotics they need. Well, the kid, mom can't afford the health care. And, you know, we live in New Brunswick. I know families like this.
Oh, we know it. We see it all the time.
And so it's like, they'll get better. Here's a, you know, somebody in Mexico taught me this home remedy. You know, wrap them in a towel and, you know, give them a hot water bottle. And the kid gets pneumonia. Well, you know, when the kid's got pneumonia, it is maybe in a heart failure, then they go to the emergency room.
Right.
Now, the family still doesn't have any money. Can't get blood from a stone. The kid goes to the emergency room. Now it costs what? $100,000? $200,000? $150,000? $80,000? For what you could have taken care of with a $100 office visit and without all that human suffering. So, you know, you're footing the bill anyway. So why not?
The problem is you're footing the bill anyway.
And you're footing a worse bill because we're all about traumatic intervention. Provide primary care for people, but don't cost jobs and small businesses in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that we all need to consider. We'll come back to food talk in just a moment. And you're listening to the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, on stage left in Cafe Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Robert Kenner. He is the producer or the co-producer of a movie that you must see. Food, Inc. is out there now. It's widely distributed throughout the country. And if there is one movie that you need to see this year, it is Food, Inc.
Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Your co-producer, we'd like to point out, is a former guest on our show, Eric Schlosser, who wrote Fast Food Nation. And this movie was about more than just food. It was really about how food companies have sort of changed the face of food production in the world.
I didn't realize it when I started out. I thought I was... you know, going to start to make a film about how our food gets to our table, where it's grown, what's in it, and, you know, the good and the bad. And I'd hope to have a conversation with industrial food producers and organic food producers, but unfortunately many of the industrial, almost all, just didn't want to talk. And I realized that our food has been transformed more in the last 40, 50 years than probably the previous 20, you know, 10,000. And I thought it would become an interesting investigation, but it turned out to be even about more than just our food.
Well, I think it wasn't just that they didn't want to talk, it was that they didn't want to be seen. And, you know, there are a lot of practices that I think the American public, with the way we produce or mass produce our food at the very least, that the public doesn't really want to see.
Yeah, and we don't even... think about it. You know, what's happened is that this food has been radically changed, but it looks very similar. And when you go to the supermarket, you're still seeing pictures of these, like, little farms with, you know, red barns and white picket fences. But in reality, this food is grown on, mega factories. And it's basically, it's a very different kind of food. The tomatoes look similar, but they don't have flavor like they used to, and they don't have nutrition like they used to, and they're not they're not nearly as good. They're still shiny and they don't bruise, but they are not quite the same tomato we used to eat.
So are you even allowed to say that? You know, couldn't you be arrested in most states for just saying that?
Well, what you're referring to is, like, they're called the veggie libel laws, and generally it's been used about meat. And what happens is that you can't disparage a food product. If you disparage a food product and cause a corporation loss of income, you can be sued for anything, but there's grounds that you can lose a suit based on that.
Hey, I've been on a lot of the websites around here, the restaurant websites, people disparaging food products all the time.
But you know, there's a lot of great food out there, and what we try to do in Food Inc. is show you that there are great things that we can do to help change the system. And, you know, it's really starting to get to know more about it and open our eyes to a system that's not working. And I do believe we're going to be able to change it and make it a system that we want that's much better for us.
Well, that's really what I enjoyed about the film, and it's why it's such an important film, because I think it does open your eyes, makes you see this is what's happening. This is how 98% of the food is produced. But here you are. Here's a farmer who, Joel was his name, I'm pretty sure.
Joel Salatin, yeah.
Joel Salatin, who Michael Pollan wrote about in Omnivore's Dilemma, mm-hmm. and he just turned out to be just a delight to spend time with Joel, and what a beautiful farm.
And there's an alternative. I remember I grew up in New Jersey, but my dad, we would weekend up in upstate New York, and he had a small farm, and we grew our own stuff. There's an alternative for feeding people than the way we're doing it, isn't there?
There is an absolute alternative. You know, we use the analogy to tobacco, which is, you know, tobacco was really big, powerful corporations, well-connected to government, who put out a product that had misleading information about the safety and the health of their product. Once people found out about how dangerous it was, I think, you know, that we started to change tobacco laws. And I think that's going to happen with food as we start to realize the consequences of this food system. It's going to be people all over this country who are going to become much more active in trying to change it. And we do have the power to change it.
Well, you know, your film does have a hopeful message, and we must have hope. And, you know, Mark and I are here every week. You know, a lot of our listening audience is familiar with a lot of the practices that you talk about that you show in the movie Food Inc. However, what you bring home more clearly, and I think that, you know, if you're interested in the show, you probably are someone who goes out and, you know, buys locally and cares about your diet in that sort of a way, from both a quality and a taste perspective, as well as a sustainability and healthful and ecological perspective. But what is really you bring into focus in your film, the things that are the most disconcerting are the freedom of speech issues,
yeah.
and the issues of the fact that this is much, I believe, much more difficult in the battle with tobacco, because with these anti-libel laws and with something I want to get into in a moment, which is the ability to own the patent on genetic material, so to own the patent on seeds, these corporations are more powerful than the tobacco companies were. And they have these things where they can come after you and sue you to shut you up. There was never a law that said you couldn't disparage tobacco.
Well, it's not that they're more powerful, because I think tobacco corporations were just as powerful and had just as many connections. I think the difference is that they learned from tobacco to put laws in place to stop you from fighting them and for them to be able to fight you more effectively.
So how in the world, and I can't even imagine, for all the craziness that's been in our politics for the last, you know, dozen years or so, I can't imagine how anyone anywhere doesn't see that on the face of it, a food libel law in a country that says that I have the freedom of speech, I can criticize the president, I can say I don't like babies, I can say, you know, whatever I want, but I can't say I don't like food. I mean, that is so obviously a violation of my right as an American citizen to the freedom of speech that's promised to me in our Constitution. Yet, you know what? I think one of the farmers said, you know, it looks like the scales of justice are, you know, here are the scales of justice, and I pile money on this side, and you pile money on that side, and whoever piles the most money on wins. I couldn't fight Monsanto if they tried to shut me up. I don't have $1.5 million to take my freedom of speech case against a food that I disparage to the Supreme Court.
Well, just to put it in context for people, because this sounds so unbelievable, you know, for me, one of the first most shocking moments in this film, and just to sort of build up what we're talking about, was when I went to a hearing on whether we should be labeling cloned meats. And at that hearing, first of all, I didn't even know there were cloned meats. I'm not a food activist. I was just trying to make a storytelling about where our food comes from. There was a representative from the meat industry who was there at the hearing who said, you know, I don't think it's in the consumer's interest to put this kind of information on a package because it would be just way too confusing for them.
He was lying.
And I got goosebumps, and I realized this is what's happening time and again. You know, it's cloned meat. It's GMOs, genetically modified organisms. You know, RBST, which is the growth hormone in the dairy cows. I could take up our whole interview just listing all the things that these corporations do not want you to know is in your food, but yet they will, you know, fight and tell you these things are really good for you, you know, that GMOs are going to save the world, but they do not want you to know it's there.
Can I share with you just one interesting, Mark and I, a little snippet from our restaurant careers. We've had our restaurants for 17 years, and about, oh, I guess 15 years ago, we wanted to, or maybe it was 12 years ago, we wanted to bring in milk that was free of recombinant bovine growth hormone. And so we couldn't find the information about the dairies that weren't using recombinant bovine growth hormone. And so we called the Department of Agriculture of the state of New Jersey. This is under a different administration. And I got all the way up to some undersecretary or assistant secretary of agriculture. And I said, listen, I'm looking for hormone-free milk. And his response, I swear to you, was, well, all milk has hormones. And I said, yeah, but the ones that are normally in the cow are okay. I want the ones, and they would not give me. They said, "Well, there's no really way that you can test and make sure that there's no recombinant bovine growth hormone in the milk, so there's no way we can make that list." I'm like, "Well, you can find farms that don't use it." And
well, I'll tell you why they can't make that list. It's because not only do these corporations stop you from having the information of what's in your food, but they will sue people who put, you know, that it doesn't contain the growth hormone or the GMOs. They'll sue you if you say it doesn't contain that.
Isn't that crazy?
So, I mean, and then it leads from that to the fact that I asked a woman whose son died from eating a hamburger with E. coli how it affects what she eats, and then she told me she couldn't answer that because she would be sued, because these meat producers would sue in a second. Even if she is the mother of a dead child.
So you can't say, I don't eat hamburgers anymore.
Well, she felt she was vulnerable, and she cited an example, and this was what was so interesting for me. It was the Oprah case, where Oprah went on the air after the Mad Cow, or during the Mad Cow scare, and said it makes you think twice about eating a hamburger. She went on the air, and she was then sued and spent 6 years in court and millions of dollars.
Right.
And ultimately, she won the case.
Yeah, thank God she was Oprah.
But she had deep pockets. So someone like Barb, you know, can't afford to fight that case. And we have people in our film who have to stop fighting because they don't have the deep pockets that Oprah had. And these corporations have put laws in place because they saw what happened with tobacco, and they didn't want to be in the same position.
Now she's.
But as I say, I really think as we start to realize how this low-cost food that's coming to us at a very high cost, as we start to see the invisible high cost, we're going to start to fight and change these things, and that's starting to happen right
now. And that fight has to happen, as we always advocate with all the wonderful producers we bring you to out there in listener land, with going to places that serve you sustainable food or bring you sustainable food. But it's also got to happen on the legislative agenda. You've got to talk to your state legislators or email your state legislators and your federal legislators to get them to change these laws, because agribusiness has a tremendous amount of money, and the laws are simply stacked. Yeah, you have a right to freedom of speech. As long as you've got $1 million to defend that right, you can say what you want. Otherwise, don't say anything Monsanto doesn't like or you're in a lot of trouble.
Now,
well, the thing that's so amazing is we are subsidizing food that's making us sick. We are subsidizing corn and soy over what we call specialty crops, which are vegetables, which do not get that subsidy. those subsidies. So this corn and soy has now gone into 90% of the items in the supermarket, and it's created, it basically turns to sugar. So Americans are becoming obese. 64% of Americans are either overweight or obese, and the majority of that 64% are obese. And that condition is leading us to early onset diabetes. And this is something where one out of every three Americans born after the year 2000 will have early onset diabetes.
That's crazy.
This will bankrupt the healthcare system. So ultimately, we're supporting food that's making us sick, and then we're going to have to pay for it again, even with our healthcare dollars. So even if you're eating out of your garden and never touch this processed food, you're going to still be paying for it.
But what about the arguments of the large multinational corporations that say, without genetically engineered food, without these methods of mass production of food, people will starve. Food will be too expensive and people will starve.
Right. Well, the fact of the matter is we spend less on food right now than at any time in history. That is correct. The problem is, as I say, we're also going to be spending tremendous amounts on health care and on the environment. All sorts of other peripheral issues are becoming astronomically expensive because of this food.
If you watch...
We have to know that there's about 6 billion people on the Earth now. About 1 billion of those are going hungry as we speak. So let's question the fact, are we feeding everyone now? Let's also look at the system we have and realize it's not sustainable.
This
system cannot continue because it's based on gasoline and it's based on destroying our Earth. So we're going to need to come up with something. It's a little like the financial Ponzi scheme, that ruined our credit markets. The difference is that when the food, when the Earth is robbed of all its nutrients and we don't have as much gasoline, it's going to be harder to turn that one around very quickly. So I think we wanted to have an honest conversation about what we can do, and I don't mean to say we have to eliminate all industrial food. We're not saying what has to be, we just think there needs to be a real conversation about where we're going and what kind of alternatives we should be creating.
If you look at the curves over the last 40 to 50 years of what we spend on food as a function of income, it's this sharply declining curve. If you look at the curves of what we spend on health care as compared to our income, it's this sharply increasing or inclining curve. And to not think that those two things are correlated, I think, is just missing the boat.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we spent about 18% on food of our paycheck, and today it's a little over 9%. But when I was a kid, we spent about 5% on health care, and today it's a little over 18%.
Well, and the health care, once that gets out of hand, that's just a limitless amount of money that you can spend on health care, especially when you're talking about chronic health conditions like diabetes, where you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a month for 50 years at a time.
Yeah, it's going to be so expensive. And that's one of the scenes in Food, Inc. is it's a story of a Latino family out in California who don't have much money, hadn't been aware of the dangers of this processed food and this fast food, and they work really long hours. They have two young children. And basically, you go see them, they buy one of these fast food meals for $11 to feed a family of four. It's a ton of food. But the problem is that when they go to buy broccoli or healthy things in the supermarket, those foods are too expensive because they're not being subsidized.
Well, and the important point there is they're not being subsidized, because often people make the argument that people who advocate food like we do, say, oh, well, what do you do? You're such an elitist. What do you do if you can't afford to shop at Whole Foods every day? And the fundamental change in the system that you advocate is, well, but the subsidy should be going toward broccoli and foods that make you healthy,
right.
Not
subsidize broccoli. Don't subsidize corn.
Well, and also just realize that this family is now spending $500 a month on medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And if their young daughter contracts early onset diabetes, which it looks like she might and will, they could be up to $1,000 that goes towards medicine. And in the town where they live, every kid in the classroom knew at least four people with early onset diabetes.
Oh, my God. Hey, I want to touch on one super important point that you make in your film, before we go, and everyone has to go see this film. It's called Food Inc. It's produced by Eric Schlosser and Robert Kenner, who's on the show with us today, and you can find links to it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. But talk to us about the significant amount of time you spend talking about seed saving and showing us what's going on with farmers are not even being allowed to keep their own seeds and to plant for next year, as farmers have done since, I don't know, Homo erectus?
Well, since the beginning of agriculture, is that you take the crop from the year before and you basically clean that crop and you get your new seeds.
And how are they fighting against that, even from producers who aren't buying patented seed product, people who are just trying to save their own seeds? How are they being impacted by modern agribusiness practices?
Well, basically, we tell the story of Monsanto's soybean, which is soy and corn dominate the U.S. landscape. I think over 30% of the land where things are grown is dedicated to soy and corn. And basically, Monsanto had about 2% of that marketplace, 2 or 4 or 5, a fair amount below 10%. It might have been 6, I'm not sure, somewhere between 2 and 6% of that marketplace in the mid-90s. Today they have over 90%. They did it because they've patented their genes. So they actually, there's ownership of life. This is brand new, that farmers are no longer allowed to save their own seeds if they use their Monsanto, if they use the Monsanto seeds or the Monsanto traits, as they're called.
Which has never existed before in law in the history of humankind.
It's never existed that a farmer couldn't save his seeds. Now, you know, I think I question that, but we're not even, that's not what we question in the film as much as the fact that why are they going after people who clean seeds, which makes it very difficult for the other 10%? Basically, they're looking to have 100% of that marketplace.
How do they go after someone who just cleans seeds for someone who doesn't buy Monsanto product? What do they
do? Ultimately, they said that Mo should have been checking to see if the seeds he was cleaning were Monsanto's or not.
So they're saying that if you get hired as a seed cleaner, you have to genetically test the seed that you're hired to clean. That's their position?
They're implying, and they're also saying he encouraged people to clean their seeds. And the fact of the matter is, if you put, there are fewer and fewer seed cleaners, which makes it impossible to go back and keep buying seeds.
And we want to just contextualize this for everyone. There's a machine that cleans seeds. It's fairly expensive. Most farms wouldn't have their own seed cleaning machine. You would hire a seed cleaner. But Monsanto is attacking the seed cleaners. So even if you don't buy Monsanto's seed, you can't find any. If these guys all go out of business, you wouldn't be able to find anyone to clean your seeds.
Yeah. And Monsanto, basically, Mo Parr, who we see in the film being crushed by Monsanto, wanted to take this to the Supreme Court. But he was not in a position to keep fighting. He was not Oprah Winfrey.
Because he doesn't have a million
and a half. And he's one of thousands of people who have had to confront this. And what's happened is all our ag schools are now being funded by the Monsantos of the world. So we're getting studies on food that prove that we need GMOs and we need Monsanto to save the earth. But they're a little like the tobacco studies that prove that our cigarettes were not healthy, that were not unhealthy for us.
I have one final question for you. I've read that as cautious as all of your folks were in the in talking with you, that you had a significant portion of your budget allocated to legal resources in making this film. Did you encounter any difficulties in that way?
I've made about 15 films before this one. And I'd have to say I spent more on this one film than all our past 15 altogether.
Was that all precautionary, or did somebody come after you?
Well, it's the fact is we're dealing in a very litigious world, and you know it turned out that food is a lot more subversive than I had ever imagined. So it's very precautionary, but these corporations that didn't want to talk to us now have websites. They try to follow me on radio shows. You know, maybe Monsanto's coming on next. But that has happened to me a number of, you know, it's happened to me at other times.
But, you know, just
the fact is that they do come on shows and they say things that I would have to say are very misleading.
Well, and remember that when Monsanto comes on a radio show after with either Eric Schlosser or Robert Kenner, when they're talking with the host, okay, these are the guys that if the host says something that they don't like, that they can twist. These are the guys that sued Oprah for saying she didn't think you should think twice about having a hamburger. So the tenor of the conversation has to be, well, you're scared to death. Your guest is going to sue you if you don't if you say the wrong thing. I mean, I feel pretty confident, Robert, that whether I like your film or not, you're not going to sue me, right?
Well, I wish I had the protections that these food corporations have. You know, I wish there was a veggie libel law for filmmakers.
Yeah,
I feel a lot safer at the moment.
So is
because there've been a number of sleepless nights. But I just want to get back to, you know, both you guys, Francis and Mark, to thank you for bringing me on the show, and just say to our viewers that, you know, not only do we vote three times a day with our fork, you know, at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you know, it's obviously it's supporting those great farmers markets and trying to buy local whenever possible, and you know, when you do go to the supermarket, start reading those labels because all those weird words are, you know, corn and soy, basically, and the more processed it is, the less nutritional values it has. But we as consumers have more power than we think. These corporations will listen to you when you say you don't want something. So on one hand, they're really powerful and strong, but they're also scared. And then we vote with our votes. So, you know, one suggestion is go to takepart.com, and I'll say it once again, takepart.com. And it's our social action website to list a number of organizations that you might want to get involved with who are active, whether it's in changing school lunch programs or, you know, it's sort of dealing with the farm to, you know, changing the farm bill to the food bill or helping to give regulatory agencies the power to recall food that's making us very sick. There are numbers of things. And also Robert Kenner Films has a list of organizations you can find out about as well.
And we'll post those links at our website at restaurantguysradio.com. Robert Kenner, thank you for producing Food Inc., and thank you for coming on our show.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Francis and Mark. I really appreciate it.
And remember, food is important. It's the basis of life, and somebody owns a lot of the food that you eat. It's time to pay attention, and this is a great way to do it, is to go see this film.
See Food Inc., too.
And to see Food Inc., exactly right. And if you want to find out where to see it or how to get to their website, go to restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll link it up and find you a showtime near you. Remember, food is important, and, you know, it's the basis of life, and a lot is going on with it that's very, very important. Our American farmers are a real treasure. Go see Food Inc. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guy, Mark and Francis.
Really important movie, Food Inc. It's a great movie, and they touched on a debate, actually, that Francis and I have had a couple of times, where Francis and I agree on most things, but I think we fall a little on either side on this particular debate. One of the points of the film, he talks a long time with the Stonyfield yogurt people, and Stonyfield yogurt people feel that they have to involve Walmart and a lot of the larger corporations into the organic movement. They have to involve these larger corporations that hopefully we can financially incentivize them to to follow the right road. And I've said for a while that I think Walmart is an important part of the answer. And in talking to Francis about this, sometimes you've kind of felt that those large chains are never going to be part of the answer.
I think you're dealing with the devil. I think that Walmart will always do what's cheapest and best for them. They present a happy face, but they're ruthless. They're ruthless with their workers. They're ruthless with their suppliers. They, you know, the old Sam Walton used to only buy American. Well, guess what? Screw that. They don't buy American anymore. They'll buy from wherever's cheapest. And they'll muscle their purveyors down. And the consumers have demanded organic. And I think Stonyfield Farms is producing that stuff. And I think it's great. And I don't think there's anything wrong with them selling at Walmart. But remember, as they get involved, we need to be careful that, you know, there's a movement afoot among a lot of these large guys. Now that we've shown there's a demand for organic, to weaken the definition of what is organic, and I think we need to be very, very careful when we involve large firms like that, because they're not doing it for any other reason than the money, and they will try, which is okay, nothing wrong with that, but they will try to change the mission to get more money.
But we need to understand that and. To not think, though, that they're going to be involved, I think is a mistake. Walmart's going to exist. It's going to exist. It's going to have a gazillion stores. It's going to have two gazillion stores. They're going to exist. People are going to shop there for their food. And if there are alternatives in the Walmart, I think that that's a better world than if there's not alternatives.
I do as well. But in reality, there shouldn't be a chain as big, allowed to be as big as Walmart, just like there shouldn't be a financial firm that is so large that if it collapses, you and me, the taxpayers, have to step in. Because what that is that's a free insurance policy for those large financial corporations. And so you say, oh, well, free market, you can't tell us what to do. But if we fail, you're going to pay the bill. Guess what? If you fail and I have to pay the bill, then I get to tell you what to do. And the Walmarts of the world, which account for 1% of the gross domestic product, the largest retailers putting small towns out of business across America. It's bad for the country. It's bad for the nation. And if Walmart were to fail, we cannot let Walmart fail as it stands. I think it should be broken up. I don't think a company should be allowed to be that large.
I don't disagree with any of that. And as a guy who's a free market kind of guy, I still don't disagree with any of that. But I think that Walmart is 1% of the gross domestic product, and they're selling food to hundreds of millions of Americans.
Yeah.
And if we can put good foods in their store and give people an alternative, that will help change the world.
I'd like to apologize to our listeners, because if Mark and I disagreed here, it would be a much more interesting show, but I'm afraid we agree. Try as we might to find a little something there, we agree. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the hour as much as I have and Mark has. You must go see Food Inc., co-produced by Robert Kenner and Eric Schlosser. Check it out on our website. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascoe.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com.